One thing I talked to Didi about after it was over, and actually Trotter refers to this idea of kind of a state of where art is now and what an audience expects or what an audience can handle in terms of going to a performance or going to see a piece. Because just in reference to the first section of the piece and the choice to use sound in such a spare way, mm-hmm. because it was my initial instinct after watching a lot of rehearsals that I just didn't want to mess with the rhythm and the rhythm of the section, because it had such a strong rhythmic identity. And I also didn't want to create some kind of oral landscape to just put it all into. And I think I just framed it with these very spare moments. They were like little gestures that for a second allowed you to maybe, like the 10th dancer in the back of the cinema, mm-hmm. is almost how I think about it, the 10th object. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it would have been so easy to make it a section that would have been so digestible if I had done a droning score or a beautiful melodic piece that the objects and the bodies would have just kind of navigated through. Sound is so strong and how it can what you can attach to it to take a third thing in.
Absolutely.
I was never going to do that, but as I was watching it and sort of feeling people struggling through that section, which I never did. I never struggled through that section in terms of its length. I think, God, I kept on thinking, God, I could have made this so easy from my job. Mm-hmm. My job could have made this so different, let's say, yeah. for the audience to take in. And I was really, I'm really, really happy that I didn't do that.
Yeah.
Me too.
Can you talk about how that process relates to making the score for the film?
In the sense that there are three distinct sections. I mean, I sort of approach the piece and make sound making just, what does it need? What do I perceive that it needs? And for me, my initial reaction to Didi talking about the film was to that it needed breath. So I made a score that specifically dealt with breath, mm-hmm. and that led me to making a score with instruments I'd actually never scored for before, which was wind instruments and brass instruments, which was a challenge for me because I've only really worked with strings and percussion, and so that was really, I mean, I just felt so strongly that that's what I needed to do, that it, mm-hmm. it absolutely wasn't a question. And we talked about that quite early on, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. after I saw the initial
forest
quick set. Time. Yeah.
You saw forest part? You didn't see Santa part?
Not until after I got started, yeah.
Uh-huh. Forest part. That's interesting.
There's something about sound when you said it wasn't your job. I mean, that you could have done your job as a composer and made the thing much easier, but that would have assumed that you were a completely different person.
Yeah,
and that
right.
it would be a completely different project, mm-hmm. because that's never been our relationship. That you, and I think this is what's so exciting to me about the future, too, for a possibility for other work, is that there doesn't have to necessarily be this relationship of, like, somebody working for someone or for someone else's project, but that it's it's a collaboration, but even that word is like so easily used, but I deeply feel it in happening in the autonomies that we maintain, not because we're trying to keep separate, but because that's just how we concentrate the work. And even the dancers also have their autonomies. Like, there's certain things that I can't decide for them, you know. And I'm very controlling, or rather, I have a lot of things to say in the rehearsal about the way things are done. But ultimately, it really relies on each individual's intelligence, and not a relationship of like a kind of God, like a boss, or to me, that's how we were able to make the piece, because if without that method of working, we wouldn't have been able to produce what we produced. I think that's very exciting.
Can you say why it needed breath? Why that was so obvious?
I don't know if that's something I can even articulate, to be honest. I mean, it had to do with the bodies working, and it, for me, was some link between the two characters that I felt I could comment on somehow in my choice of instrumentation, and then how I actually then made the pieces beyond the instrumentation choice. So I don't know if I can actually say why that struck me in such a strong, powerful way. And also, it was then when I sort of came up with this gasping thing, that because it wasn't just benign somehow, right. Breath. It wasn't benign breath that you don't notice. Mm-hmm. I really wanted, and it wasn't that I was either framing it or making it into a cartoon either.
Right.
But yet something else again, where you notice the work involved in getting the air in and out, and it's just that saying, hey, it's not by accident that we're breathing.
Noticing a kind of labor seems significant.
And it's noticing the labor without the musician creating a story of tragic gasping. Mm-mm. It's
no, like, there was humor.
It was a real gasp.
Yeah, it was a real gasp. And then it also, which was another arc of the sound for the film, is that sort of came as a byproduct, was this humorous element as well.
I think the gasping in the forest scene gave a dynamic that was, you didn't stay on it meaning one thing, mm-hmm. ever. Like, it went from impulse to impulse.
Yeah.
And that made it humorous, but it also made it sort of beyond humorous. It was like playful.
And then also the use of the trombone for the Santa, in which
that was funny.
Yeah, that was, I mean, I thought that was funny, but it was just, I mean, I kept telling Jim that it was about being pathetic and being somehow even tragic, that these melodies, and when I was giving him descriptions of how to play the melodies and what kind of melodies to play, I mean, that was the kind of language that I used. It reflected off the Santa in such a, like, it just gave it another layer that seemed to...
But it's interesting because you use the words pathetic and tragic, and, you know, and they're loaded. They have this sort of affect and this expression, and Santa Claus is full of every possible projection, story, narrative,
exactly.
and bubble you can blow up into it. And so we put them together, and it sort of makes a... like it makes it an uber feeling, like it's a feelingness that goes over everything, that mm-hmm. goes on top of everything, that you can sort of plow through, and that's what makes it funny.
Yeah.
And that's what, that humor is so hard to find, especially when I'm working and nobody's moving for 5 minutes. But it's a great relief, too.
It takes it back to rhythm, like what you were saying about the rhythm of the nine bodies part. And when I watch the movie all the time, what I've noticed was rhythm, was duration and shift, and insistence. Mm. There's something rhythmic about that somehow.
And then the dark part, the absence of rhythm.
Yeah.
Or a different kind of rhythm, because clearly you were listening to each other, and often you were listening to stops and starts, which imply rhythm. But it was a really different way of being inside a rhythm or being outside of a rhythm.
Yeah.
Than it was in the other sections.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that it wouldn't... I mean, all these... We Got Lucky. The movie is called We Got Lucky. Hamishwein gehabt, which really means we got a pig, but it means we got lucky. We got lucky at the kitchen because when you take off your clothes and you slide on the floor, it produces this...
beautiful sound.
This amazing sound. And that... you guys made the sound. You were one of the instruments of the sound. Like, without your sound, it would have been a different piece.
I mean, guys, the more I think about it, sound is like, it's all about sound. It's all about what we don't see. It's what we hear. It's so cool. That guy Joe Deeves came to the show and he said to me, yeah, it's all about sound. I was like, of course it is. But
Well, the irony of every composer that makes music for dance is that it's never about sound.
What do you mean?
Well, just in how I think sound is so often ignored when looking at dance and talking about dance. That's all. Mm-hmm. Just in the most basic, mundane level. Yeah. And it's a very, I mean, I've talked about this with a few of my friends that have made a lot of, you know, devoted a lot of their work to making music for dance, and it's a very strange kind of work to do in some ways, because it can be so invisible.
Yeah, and I think doesn't it also for dance audiences, like, people have trouble catching up, like, and that's not I'm not saying that putting anybody down, but I think people have trouble catching up to the, I mean, this is like, it's not music interpreting an emotion that is hidden in the dance. It's not music facilitating an ease of experience, like you said before, for the audience. It's not even fusion of sound with body, although it kind of is. Mm-hmm. It's a whole different way of bringing those elements into relationship. Just like the nine bodies precedes the cinema and there's two separate things, the sound, even though it's completely integrated and the piece doesn't exist without it, basically, the piece does not exist without the sound. And every part of the piece, all three parts, but the sound remains separate somehow. Yeah.
But somehow, Didi, I've been sort of wanting you to talk a little bit about what preceded this piece and thinking about No Change. And when you talk about sound is everything, I think, like, oh, microphones.
Yeah. Yeah, so absolutely.
It's interesting, like, and I've also heard, like, that music is not something recent in your life, that you've always sort of been, that music is somehow part of your life, it's always been. But I'm wondering about that arrival at sound is everything for your work.
I mean, it's the name of the next piece.
Interesting.
When I worked with David Keane and Dress for Floating, and I was working, that was like, I was really directly dealing more than I ever had been. I mean, I always have dealt with this issue of the objectification of the dancer, and then the body as object, and then the beautiful object body, you know. I've always kind of thought about that, but was never really like, this is what it's about. Like, the body is the content of the work. It never was that until I worked with David Keane, and we talked about the sound being an object as well. Mm-hmm. And then I worked with him quite a bit when I was working on No Change, and then I decided to strip away even more and just work with me as the motor of sound, or the sound that I made would be my motor somehow, so that it wouldn't involve another intervention or adding any kind of processing to the sound. even in that, I was still working in a much more sort of affective zone. Or can I say affective, or is it affectual, or is it emotional? Like mm-hmm. a sort of intuitive or experiential realm. Mm-hmm. And No Change was kind of both.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about my experience, but it was also like trying to get away from it being about my experience.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of relating or dealing directly with an object rather than my feelings or my thinking on the inside. It was using my thinking as a structure, a mode of operating on the stage. And sound, for some reason, sound just like stated that. You know, you pick something up and it makes a sound. So it states, the sound is announcing that there's a relationship between me and the bucket or something. So that if the sound announces that there's a relationship between me and the bucket, it doesn't dramatize the relationship because it's not processed. The volume doesn't go up or down. It's just as it is.
It kind of signals that there is a you and that there is a bucket.
Yeah,
and so that they're
two things.
They affect each other.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, I think that's no, but that's a really
that's the
critical.
Yeah,
yeah, no, that's the Marx I was talking. It's about this Michael Fried theatricality. It's
yeah.
about
yeah.
you know asserting a kind of presence, and there's a. I think that's at the core of a lot that we've been talking about.
But I think really good musicians learn about this stuff like way early on. They learn how to separate like, well, they don't, you don't separate, I don't, tell me if I'm wrong, but I feel like maybe in experimental music people are exposed to this earlier or something, like the sort of range of, the separation between a kind of emotional experience and, or like an expressive experience and a technical experience. I mean, Cunningham does it.
Yeah,
but and I learned Cunningham technique, but I guess I was a bad student because I just you know I didn't try to be in Cunningham's company or anything like this, and I really like to be on the stage where there's you know red curtains and chandeliers, so I really like that special place of expressivity, but it's. I don't like it as much as I think I like it or as much as I thought I liked it. It turns out that there is something else beyond that that I like even more, and it has to do with sound.
There's this person I keep mentioning,
uh-huh.
Fred Moten, and there's this thing
yeah.
he says, which is something like when he's talking about the force of orality of objects, and he says something
force of
like...
orality.
No, but that this oral force has some... He said something like it gives you back the vision that ocular centrism repressed.
Oh,
wow.
That's great. Can you say it again?
that this, you know, oral force has the potential to give back the visuality that ocular centrism repressed. Or that it's not about doing away with vision or privileging sound over sight, but that it can play, you know, at this point in time, a critical force of reordering that can allow an object to have a more complex presence. That the emphasis, you know, we have on vision doesn't allow
right.
or elide certain
right.
aspects of...
That's great.
Mm-hmm. Yes, fantastic.
Beautiful.
Because we see it, we know what it is, and we don't have to think about it. But if we don't quite see it in the way we think we see it because we also hear it,
right.
we
right.
don't quite know
right.
what it is, and we have to think about it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, and reckon with
yeah.
the fact that it's there and it affects you.
Yeah.
Thank you, everybody. Dee Dee, Danielle, Zena, thanks a lot.
Thanks.